What's up, guys? This is Chris Mead from the D2CX e-commerce podcast. I'm here with your boy, Steve Odell, co-founder and legend from Tenzo. What's going on, man?
What's up, Chris? Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to be on the pod.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining, dude. So I met you, let's call it 2 years ago, maybe 2 years ago or so. I was
2 years.
desperate on LinkedIn trying to find a good matcha, right? I graduate college, I'm 21, I'm spending $8.50 a day at Starbucks, and I realize I'm putting probably, what, 600 calories in my body at a time, maybe
Yeah,
more.
so much.
So I put up, who's got the best matcha out there? And LinkedIn just swarms me with Steve Odell. And I'm like, who the hell is Steve Odell? And everyone's like, yo, you gotta try Tenzo. And I think I've been drinking this stuff every day for like the last 2 years now. So
Yep.
tell me the backstory. How did you get started? How important is personal branding on LinkedIn? Because you're a beast on there. Give me the backstory on both of those things.
Yeah, so backstory on Tenzo is my co-founder and I were athletes our whole lives, and we were drinking a lot of caffeine, a lot of sugar and calories, similar to you. You know, whether that was like pre-workouts, Red Bulls, Frappuccino at Starbucks, whatever that is, vanilla latte, 10 pumps of sugar, you know. And we wanted something healthier. And so one day I drank a bunch of cold brew, actually, and my stomach felt like crap. And then I was like, there's got to be something better. Went on Google, you know, found healthiest. I searched healthiest drink on the planet and found matcha. And then for very similar reasons to you, got hooked on it, like the clean energy vibes, no calories, super good for you. To go into the second part of that question, as the company started growing, personal branding became a really good and cheap way for us to build brand awareness. And at the time when we were starting, the LinkedIn algorithm was literally insane. It was kind of like TikTok right now. So it's like if you knew what you were doing, you could just literally generate like a million brand impressions like a day on LinkedIn with consistent posts. And so that's what I did. And you know, it brought in a lot of people. We actually got our largest investor to this day still was he messaged me in LinkedIn DMs and then wrote a check a couple months later.
That's insane. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy what LinkedIn's done for our retail game. I know you're just talking before the show, like you guys are closing retail deals left and right. Talk to me about the evolution of the company, right? Like you started it. Was it D2C focused only? Was it, can we get subscriptions? How has it kind of evolved?
Yeah, so that's a good kind of segue into some of the lessons. So when we first started, we were like, oh, matcha is a perfect subscription product. It's lightweight, it's high value. You know, and lightweight means you're not getting paying an arm and a leg for shipping. And then it also is very built into a habit. So like you said, you drink every day for 2 years. It's like once people find their kind of like morning drink or mid-afternoon drink or wherever you slot in, they're very consistent with it. And so they'll drink Tenzo every single day for years. And so kind of wrapping all those things in, we're like, oh, this would be a great D2C product. We didn't really know what we were doing on D2C though. And the subscriptions at the time were like really not built out unless you had money to do it custom. And like recharge was like infantile, Bold was basically non-existent. Shopify didn't have any solution like natively. So we just started doing normal D2C. We had like six products. All of them were sort of average, like from a, you know, a co-man in Arizona. And we didn't really know what we were doing. And then we were every day when we were building Tenzo on the D2C side, we were going to this cafe. They were making, serving up tons of coffees. And we just work out of there and we'd bring our bottles of Tenzo and work. And then one day we were just like, wait, why don't we sell it into the cafes? And then it was like light bulb effect. And like matcha wasn't at that time in like a single coffee shop in the whole country. It was only sold in like luxury tea only places. Yeah, and so then it was like, oh man, like let's kind of switch it up a little bit and go just walk down the road and close a coffee shop. And so, you know, we walked to one and we were like, hey, do you want to buy matcha? And they're like, absolutely not. What is that? And then we walked to the other one like a block away and we were like, hey, Bob, Cheryl down the road is going to pick us up, you know, but you can be first if you
Oh,
go
yeah.
right now. Bob was like, oh yeah, sign me up. And then we went back to Cheryl and we were like, Cheryl, you can't miss out. Bob just picked us up. You know,
That's
and that's how
awesome.
our first few accounts, and that was in Long Beach. And then over the years, we slowly grew D2C. And then, Yeah, just expanded our food service footprint a lot.
So is it like a perfect balance right now? Is it 50-50 D2C and wholesale, or what's kind of the breakdown look like?
Yeah, last year it was about 60-40 D2C to wholesale.
Okay. And do you care where the money's coming from?
Right now, not a lot. I mean, I think like we're really focused. Like we just launched on Amazon last month, and we're really focused on building out these, like we think of them as like siloed P&Ls that all build on each other and build brand awareness and things like that. And you can shift resources from one to another if you want. Like say we have a great opportunity to do a marketing stunt on the D2C side, or you know, we're launching in a massive chain. Maybe we want to shift some marketing dollars into one, you know, kind of point. But overall, they all go together. They all build brand awareness. And as one grows, it affects everyone else.
Makes sense. Talking about marketing stunts, right? Like for us at CrossNet, when a knockoff comes into the market, we don't talk about it, right? Because I don't want to give them any time of day. Where it's kind of, I'm not in the food and bev world at all, right? I'm just a consumer of yours. I feel like in Tenzo's world, you guys need to be taking shots at the competition, right? Like why you guys are the best. Do you feel like you give them attention when you do that, or what's like your viewpoint there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on like kind of what level you think of competition, right? Like, I don't think a competition is like another matcha brand. All the matcha brands in the US right now, I think of like a rising tide lifts all boats. Everyone's spending marketing dollars. We're all growing this category together. Who I will take shots at though is like Starbucks or the general notion of drinking coffee. Like, we like look at our Facebook ads, we are just ripping those companies apart. Yeah. And, you know, for good reason.
Yeah, no. So how do you separate it then, right? So like 2 years back, the matcha is $50 or $60 or whatever it is, right? Whatever it is now. I've had terrible experiences because most of the matcha I buy on the internet tastes like dirt. Like literally just grass in the backyard. How are you guys like making people trust you from an online perspective? Like that's gotta be so hard, right?
Yeah, it definitely is. But that question is resolved really in education. So like education, one, it's super costly and takes a lot of time. It's like people are in short attention spans. People don't even really learn that well, frankly. You know, and it's like you really need to get the point across in a really quick, easy to digest way. And the easiest way to do that with matcha is like very low quality matcha. Like before even tasting it, it typically has a much duller color. Like if you think of like green cardboard paper when you're a kid, and you think of that same green cardboard paper when it's been left on a windowsill for like 3 weeks, it gets that kind of faded, dull color. Yep. You know, it's very easy on Facebook or ads to just highlight those two, the distinction, and be like, this is Tenzo, this is high quality melon. This is, you know, what you're buying on Amazon.
Makes sense. No, that's a good point for sure. What about subscriptions, right? Because when I think of SMS, most brands suck at doing it. And I feel like you guys have just really perfected. I know you're a lean team too. How many people you guys have working at Tenzo now?
Right now, I mean, we've made some hires, Chris. I mean, we're at like six full time.
Let's go. That's amazing. How built out is that SMS program? It's so clean, right? If I'm overstocked on matcha this week, it's so easy to push back my subscription by 2 weeks. And you guys have almost made it flawless. Like, talk to me about how much work went into that.
Yeah. So for the last 2 years, it's been like this number one focus and priority for the entire company. And so there's a lot of like kind of points of leverage, I call them. And I think about that as like this entire e-commerce engine. It starts with like the first touch point on an ad or in a cafe. And it goes all the way down to like the customer has been drinking Tenzo for 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and so a lot of work goes into retention and, you know, doing studies and surveys and quantitative analysis to figure out what customers have the highest LTVs and then what are the steps in the funnel that they took, right? You know, so like one of them, like you mentioned, is like, before your order ships out, we have an SMS that goes out and we'll say like, hey, would you like to skip, delay, push back, cancel, you know, add a piece of tea-ware. And then from there, it's very easy, like you said. And so signing up for that SMS will increase LTV, you know, and then we kind of follow that loop, which is like, what other things are there? And one of them was like, we did a study that said, how fast does an order get delivered after it's placed on Shopify? And we found that if the order was delivered within 6 days of order placement, those customers also had a higher LTV. So then it's like, then we switched our shipping service and Shopify, you know, and the 3PL, because it makes sense. It's higher LTVs. You pay $2 more for shipping every order.
Of course.
But the LTV is extended by, you know, five times that.
Makes sense. And where are those texts? What program are you guys using to send out those texts?
Originally, that was through Electric SMS. Shout out Wesley, a good buddy of mine. And then that was, they got bought by Recharge. That's actually now all natively in Recharge.
Okay. And what about the subscriptions? Is that done through Recharge as well?
Yep, that's Recharge. Shout out Recharge.
So we use them too, so that's cool. Now Recharge has definitely been hooking it up. And you guys launched a new site recently. Is it performing well?
Yep, site's doing great. And you know, that's the thing. It's like same thing with CrossSense. Like we have never raised like $10 million round. It's like we have some investors. Shout out to the investors.
Uh-huh.
Chris. You know, and so we never had like kind of like FU money. And so we've been diligent about spending too much on brand and creative, and just our marketing is very focused on sales. But yeah, no, constantly improving the website and brand is critical.
No, that makes sense. But so, I mean, there's so many things I wish if I had that FU type money, right, with CrossNet, I'd go be buying billboards. I would take out a big ass billboard in front of Hermosa Beach, right, and say CrossNet greater than ADP. Like, what kind of ambitions do you have for Tenzo if you had that type of money? What would be, like, the first few things you do?
No, I would do definitely billboards. And I think about it, billboards would be one, and I would go really aggressively targeting coffee. You know, kind of like Oatly is targeting all the other milks and stuff like that. And then I would also do, like, probably, like, a very large ad campaign similar to the Apple computer versus the PC ads, where, like, the PC is, like, this sickly dude who's, like, always coughing, and the Mac's, like, this cool guy that's, you know, clean-shaven and, like, nice. And it's, like, because the PCs in the olden days always got viruses.
Yeah.
So there's, like, a dichotomy. And so, yeah, I think we would do the same thing with coffee, and just matcha versus coffee, where the matcha is, like, this super dope guy or girl, and the coffee guy or girl is like this like jittery, like kind of freak, really yellow teeth, like all that stuff.
Yeah, no, that's dope. That makes a lot of sense. And like, definitely you guys will get there for sure. We'll raise some more money for you.
Yeah, but exactly.
First few hires, bro. So you just said you hired 6 people. There's a lot of people listening here. Not a lot of them are in the same category as a Tenzo or a CrossNet. I just had the truck guys on. Like, what were those first 6 hires looking like? What was the most important for you? And what do you think about hiring? Is it finally have enough cash in the bank, or I'm going to take a risk for 2 months on this hire for them to make me the money back? Like, when was the perfect time for you to hire, even though there's never a perfect time, right?
Yeah, I think it's a blended answer. Like, first point of advice would be, like, go uncomfortably long with as little people as possible. You know, and when you're really drowning in work, like, that's when you should hire. And a lot of brands, especially the ones that fundraise and then kind of like fizzle out, they, as soon as they get the money, the notion is like, spend it. When really you want to like raise the money and like keep growing and have this war chest so you can do a crazy billboard, you know, when you need it, or like a Super Bowl ad or what have you. And so I think that's, you know, lesson number one. And then lesson number two, especially for us, was like, put people into profitable slots. So it's like we hired sales reps, sales support person, and then a marketing person that's focusing on like affiliates and influencers. So she's driving revenue. It's like we're not on this point. And every non-revenue generating position for us right now is like Upworkers, contractors. It's like we want to pay as little as possible, like people that will do a great job. But yeah. We don't want like a massively expensive operations employee at this point.
No, of course. Makes sense. Where are you finding those contractors on?
Mainly Upwork. I mean, we have probably 30 Upworkers right now.
That's crazy. Who manages that? You have one point person for all of them, or is it kind of siloed?
No. Siloed depending on the leadership.
Okay.
You know, so it's like I have a couple people with me that are doing e-commerce reporting, updating spreadsheets, updating like a unit projected actuals variance model, like pulling all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then Robbie, my co-founder, has another guy that's taking like all of our transactions, our credit card transactions and debit card transactions, bank statements, and they're uploading them every single day reconciled into our cash flow document.
Okay.
Yeah, so we always have a very clean, up-to-date cash flow projection on what's going on and the current status.
That's good. That's good to have. Talk to me. So Robbie, right? Like, he's your co-founder. You guys both grew up playing volleyball together, right?
Yep.
How's that dynamic work? Like, he's on the road a lot playing volleyball. I always see him traveling. I feel like you're the one in the office. Like, how does that relationship kind of work? I could speak for days about how us three co-founders all live different lifestyles. Like, break that down for me. Listeners are definitely going through that too.
Yeah. So first of all, I mean, Rob and I have a really good yin and yang, right? And I think that that's important. I'm sure you have this you know, across that, it's like Rob is really good at like shutting crazy ideas down, like managing cash flow, making sure the operations are tight. So he's like the brakes, right? And I'm like, let's go, let's close deals, let's get this done. Come on, let's fucking hustle. You know, I'm just all gas, you know, and so that's good. And then I think it's just being respectful about each other's lifestyle and what they want to do. Like Rob is my best friend. Like I see him all the time, you know, and I'm sure you, same thing with you and Greg. And it's like,
yeah, exactly.
And we don't need to do every single thing together. But that was kind of like a lesson too. It's like for the first 3 years, we lived together. We ate our every single meal together. We talked about Tenzo 18 hours a day together. Oh, and it was like, that's super fun. And those are some of the best memories of my life, you know, undoubtedly. But at some point it's like, all right, like grow up here.
Absolutely. How are you shutting it off now? Because I got my funny, Greg texts me. So anyone listen, my brother Greg's our co-founder, and he texts me nonstop. Greg, if you're listening, you text me way too much, bro. But like texting me at 11 o'clock at night to talk about CrossNet, and I'm in bed like watching Netflix with my fiance. Like, how do you separate the work, right? Because like you're grinding right now trying to build an empire.
Yeah, and I think it's just about boundaries. Like we've gotten better at that. I mean, we'll still call each other at 11 p.m. and be like, dude, I just learned this, bro. Check out this idea. You know, and it's like, it's fine. And it's cool. It's good to do every once in a while. But also, I just think it's about, like, if it happens too much, just be like, Rob, shut up. Like, I'm trying to sleep here, bro. Like, I'm not talking about it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, you got to set those boundaries. And I think the time away from work is almost where I feel like I get the most creative. Like, I have a habit, I gotta go in the hot tub like almost once a day or take a bath once a day, and I just put my phone away, and I just like, shit, I just came up with two good ideas for CrossNet that will make me a lot of money, and I wasn't doing CrossNet work. So
yeah, no, I agree. And I think there's some studies about that actually. Like time away allows for you to synthesize ideas and for things to come together in unique ways. I mean, for me, that's been like this Ironman training I've been doing, or just working out. It's like I was on the bike. I did a 100-mile bike ride like 10 days ago.
I saw that.
Disgusting. 7 hours on the bike. So like,
disgusting.
I'm just sitting there thinking the whole time about like things that are going on, and Tenzo's popping in left and right.
That's crazy, dude. I want to know a little bit about the partnerships, right? Like, that's been a big thing for CrossNet, is like as a one SKU company, and obviously you're one SKU, but I swallow these cans every month and then have to give you more money for them. So like, how do you think about partnerships? How, like the Liquid IV thing, stuff that you guys have done. When is too many partnerships? Like, what are you looking for? What are you looking for there? Because I'm sure you could partner with so many damn companies now.
Yeah, well, I think it's just about being very particular with them, right? You know, it's like partnering with as many companies as possible is definitely not the right answer.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, first you gotta set your limitations on like what's possible and realistic for our current team and money and things like that. And once you know that, it's about probably doing a little bit of testing if you're a young brand to figure out what sticks and what works. And then after that, just doing the right ones. And like for those, the Liquid IV one you mentioned, it's like, we just want to partner with those big companies, you know, that will actually sell them matcha. And so we're going to make a ton of revenue from it.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's also like the little giveaways that we'll do on Instagram, like when we partner with CrossNet. And then those specifically, it's like, how do you maximize that partnership, right? If you're going to do one, like, how do you get as many touch points in as possible? You know, are we going to hop on Instagram Live, you know, explain the brands? Are we going to send an email about each other? Are we going to do an SMS?
Exactly.
You know, maximizing those is key.
No, absolutely. Any mistakes you guys have made along the way? I mean, I could think of so many we've done on the partnership side where we've made co-branded project, like products that didn't stick, you know, like really kind of trying to do too much. Like anything to note on your end?
No, I think actually the bespoke co-branded products were one. And then for us, like the lesson was like, we really shouldn't be doing things that are like out of system. It's like there's all these shiny objects. Like people probably come to you every single day with like all these ideas and opportunities. You really just got to stay focused.
It's so hard, man. Like every day there's another idea, another backyard game, another thing to do. And it's like, how do you just do what you need to do? And then like for us, the biggest thing this quarter has been every employee has 3 or 4 milestones that they need to move. Like it's almost like corporate America. It used to be, here's 100 things a week. These are your 3 or 4 milestones for the quarter. If you don't hit them, you're in trouble. But if you hit them, you're doing a good job. And that's like just setting those basic KPIs.
Yeah, exactly. And we do something very similar. We do like a Gantt process, and each employee has like a list of a couple of them that they'll do over the course of like a couple months. You know, that's really it. It's very simple way to run a company, and people think like, oh, it's a super complex thing. And it can be complex in some instances, but like, we're not building Teslas. Like, we are selling matcha, you know?
Yeah. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. What's the future look like for Tenzo? I know you got a lot of plans. What's the next 12 months look like?
Yeah. Next 12 months is we're building out new single serves. So that's going to be like our first like traditional retail products. It'll be a lower price point. It'll be on shelves in grocery stores. By the counter, you'll be able to pull out one stick and check out just that. You know, and then we'll also put that in every cafe run across the country. You know, and besides that, it's really just scaling up what we're currently doing. It's like, what is the next 12 months look like? It's almost like, what are we not doing? Like, what we are doing is just staying really focused. What we're not going to try to do is launch like 100 new products. We're not going to try to get in every grocery store in the country. It's like, we're going to just try and be in a few, you know, and then build up a good base, keep growing revenue. We'll hire probably like 4 or 5 more people, but nothing crazy.
Focus. I love it. I love it. I love it. Last question for you. Who else should I have on this podcast? I need one more new guest.
Have you had David from Dream Pops?
No, I have not. I need an intro. We follow each other on Instagram, but we don't know each other that well.
Yeah, I'll send you the intro after this. He's a good guy. He'd be good to have on the pod.
Let's get it. David, I'm coming for you. All right, Brooke. Thanks for listening, guys. Check out Tenzo. Tenzo, best matcha company in the damn world, I promise you.
Yeah.
So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons. Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on and share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.